All right, welcome everybody. Thanks for being here today at our session. We'll get started because we want to leave lots of time for Q&A. Thank you. Welcome, welcome. My name is Alex Devine. I'm the president of VSG Marketing, which is an agency that helps brands through technology, really. And I am lucky enough today to be joined by these talented influencing professionals. So we want to provide value to y'all today, really just chatting about influencing as a lucrative career. You know, anyone can be a creator in this space, but to make that a long-lasting, you know, way of life and support yourself is a completely different matter. It takes a lot of planning and chutzpah and creation and creativity. So I have a wonderful panel here today. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then we will have a discussion. And I want to leave lots of time for questions. Go ahead, ladies.
Hi, I'm Shayna Davis Ross, and I'm the founder and CEO of Ponte Firm, which is a talent management agency. We represent over 70 different creators across fashion, beauty, and lifestyle, including these two ladies.
Hi, my name is Audrey Boos. I'm a recent graduate from UCLA. I was studying economics, originally going to be a financial analyst, and I started posting videos my senior year. They took off, and this was the more lucrative and enjoyable option for me, so this is my full-time career now.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jean Gray. I'm the girl behind the gray layers on Instagram and TikTok, and I've been doing this for 9 years full time. I'm really excited to chat with you about the industry and just what I do for work.
Thank you guys for being here and being willing to talk with us about this. I actually have a question for Shayna first. Talent management, it's kind of that next step or that professionalism portion of being a creator. As a talent representative, could you talk a little bit about what you look for when you're looking to represent somebody and how that process kind of goes? Give us context.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I would say we have a lot of different talent conversations every single day, every single week, with talent across all different platforms, mainly TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. I would say that it really comes down to a few things, one of which is the content itself. I think that the talent manager and the team really have to relate and, you know, love the content that the creator is creating, since otherwise we probably wouldn't be the best fit. I would say also metrics, since, you know, a lot of the conversations that we have with different brands and agency at this point come down to conversion rates, come down to views, impressions, reach, all of these things that also, you know, impact how much they're able to charge for a single post. And then also there's like the little bit of like, you know, vibe, I would say also is like the other thing that kind of goes into it. You are talking to these talent all day, every day, you know, if they're extremely busy. And I also say you travel with them even sometimes. And so I think that you have to have a certain like comfortability, rapport, obviously that builds over time. But I think that has to jive off the bat.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned the demographics or the analytical piece of this business. It is absolutely a business. When we were prepping for this panel, one of the kind of sticking points we talked about was, you know, my grandma doesn't even think this is a real job. What are you doing? You're just posting on social media. And I don't know that anyone in this room still feels that way, because why would you be here, right? But it's, I work with companies all the time and was doing kind of research for this, and a study just came out that out of the 500 top brands in the US, 60% of them are going to increase their influencer marketing budget specifically over the next year, right? 60%. And I do have stats on that I can get you guys later. And then the growth of the industry just from a like a revenue sharing standpoint is really, really powerful. So if you think about valuation of $24 billion as of, you know, the beginning of this year, and an estimated nearly $200 billion in value by 2032, I think was the statistic. There's a lot of money to be made here. And so it's absolutely a job, Grandma.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that you could also speak to like being in college most recently for, you know, a degree to go into a different career path and then making that shift based on also earnings.
Yeah, for sure. I had an internship at a really competitive internship that I landed. I had plans to return there as a financial analyst, like I said. And my degree and having those experiences taught me so much about the business side of this. I don't think I definitely didn't think about the business side of this when I first got into it, but when you're doing deals with brands, and these are big, big, big brands, and they expect a level of professionalism from you, and when you're making this money, you need to think about things like taxes. And I've heard so many horror stories of influencers who are not saving at all for taxes, and then they get a nice little surprise. But yeah, it's taught me so much about the financials and the business side of things, because that is such a major part of this business that I think nobody necessarily thinks about right off the bat.
Yeah, absolutely. Since you brought that up, great segue. Would you talk to us a little bit about like the first brand deal that you got? And then I want to hear about the biggest or like most exciting project that you worked on, and maybe what was the difference between those two, a little bit of your path there.
Yeah, it was my senior year. I was a few months out from graduation, and I was so scared of contracts with brand deals. So I'd been posting for a few months seriously, and I was getting offers from brands, but I was so freaked out by contracts, and I knew if I was gonna really lean into this, I wanted someone who was really good at what they did, like in my corner. And that's when I reached out to Shayna, and I decided to kind of sign with a manager right off the bat, because I needed that assistance in dealing with contracts and things like that. So yeah, I had my first brand deal in March of 2023, so just about a year ago. And then now a year later, I'm working with my favorite brands. I've been able to be a lot more selective with who I'm working with, and I just did a brand deal with Olaplex, which is like my favorite hair company. So yeah, I've definitely been able to be more selective and work with my favorite brands now, just a year later.
Yeah, don't you think that's so important as an influencer, working with brands that you really believe in, and you get to kind of curate that relationship, so more so than even the vibe check. I think that's true on the brand side of the house as well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that, you know, ultimately brands look for talent who love their products. I think that off the bat, you know, when we pitch talent to different companies, I would say we get much better results, over 50%, you know, just based on, you know, sending a video of them already using the product. You know, I think that brands really want to believe that the talent authentically love what they are putting out there. And I think also consumers have become a lot more smart in terms of understanding when things aren't authentic, and then, you know, perhaps like not necessarily resonating with that influencer anymore. And so I think for all of our talent at Ponte Firm, we really lean into strategizing and staying authentic to what you really like, so that you continue to kind of push for the partnerships you really want, rather than take everything that comes your way. Because naturally, in working with a team, you're just going to get more volume of partnerships, like you both have seen, but I think you have more options then to be more selective.
Yeah, Jean, I think you have done that incredibly well, and you have 9 years, I want to say, like, of hard time in the influencer space, and so you've traveled across platforms, and you've kind of curated this audience. I think when we were talking earlier, you said something really beautiful, like, my audience has grown up with me, and we get to be in this new stage of life. Do you want to share a little bit about what that 9 years has been for you?
Yeah, so I started out, it was on Tumblr. I don't know if anybody here knows what Tumblr is still. Is it still alive and breathing? I'm not sure. But that's where I started, and it was an outlet for me while I was in college in nursing, and I absolutely hated, you know, what I was studying, and I was like, oh, I just need something as an outlet, somewhere to be creative. And so that was Tumblr for me, and after that, I didn't realize I gained like 80,000 followers on Tumblr. And I transferred to Instagram, and they followed me over. And from there, my first campaign, I don't even know if, we didn't call it campaigns back like 10, 11 years ago, before I went full time. It was $10 for a t-shirt. And I was like, wait, I'm getting a free t-shirt and $10. Like, this is amazing. Like, I've never heard of this before. You know, like, if I could do 10 of these, I could pay my gas bill, like something, you know. So I just kept doing that. And while in school and while doing my full-time job as a marketing consultant at, I don't even remember the company, but I kept getting fired for it because I had Instagram and because I was on social media, which now I feel like is so different, because if you have a strong following, they would hire you so easily. So that's like the big difference, I feel, one of the big differences. So then my boyfriend at that time, my husband now, he said, why don't you just stop looking for a full-time job and see where this goes? My second gig was socks for $50. I was like, okay, how can I make this into my own and make it creative for the brand. And I posted it, they paid me the $50, and it just kind of kept going. And the rest was history. And that's it.
You did mention that. So you had a full-time job when you first started influencing, right? I'm sure that's the case for many. Do we have influencers or aspiring influencers in the crowd today? All right, cool. I think that's pretty common. As you get started, you got to pay your bills, right? Until you hit that threshold where you can create for a living. So full-time job, and you said you experienced like backlash from that.
Yeah, and there was no credibility. It wasn't a real job. I feel like only recently has it become somewhat respectable in a way. My mom, my family, my friends were like, what are you doing? What is this? Like, you're posting for money? Like, that's weird. Now it's a thing. Now it's a whole industry. It's $1 billion.
It is $24 billion industry as of today.
Exactly. So that's amazing.
Absolutely love it. Okay, good. Well, I do want to talk about demographics and kind of some accessibility barriers, potentially age-wise. Like, who can be an influencer? What does that built-in audience look like? Would love to talk about that. But before we do, to kind of wrap up our influencing as a job discussion, how do you know if you're ready to look for professional representation as an influencer? And maybe, is that right for everybody?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that for any talent who really wants to turn this into a full-time job, I think, you know, absolutely starting off on your own in some cases is great if you're still figuring out if you want to do this and all you're kind of learning the landscape. But I think in turning this into something where you're doing over six figures more, you really do need to get a team, because at a certain point it affects your productivity and like what you're able to complete. Like, you're not able to do as many opportunities if you're also answering all your emails and negotiating for yourselves and maybe negotiating your contracts, which, you know, might not be the strong suit there. So maybe you get a lawyer. But I would say that overall, you're reliant on what's coming to you, which, you know, in sales, like, this is like essentially like we're here to do sales too. So it's not just about what you're getting, it's about what's out there and the pitching. And I think that a lot of talent who are on their own don't pitch themselves just because they don't have the contacts, they don't know where to start, they think it's awkward. They're like, I don't want to pitch myself, that's weird. And so, I mean, I totally get it. I also sometimes, I mean, even for myself, if I was ever to send out a pitch for myself, I'd be like, oh God, gross. But I think that at the same time, I think that, you know, it makes it a lot easier. You're able to have a lot more bandwidth to create and monetize if you have like the backing of a really strong team. And I think that's really what allows creators to really excel in their career and, you know, make it a little bit more official. I would say in terms of what we really look for, you know, similarly to like all of the things that I was talking about, whether it's like we look for like the content, we look for the metrics, I also would say typically we look for a certain level of earnings, just because I think that we'd like to understand that the talent has like interest already before we move forward. It's almost like, you know, we're not typically at this stage of the company starting with a lot of talent who haven't done at least one thing themselves, just to also understand like what is the process of that, which also makes it a lot easier for us to explain where we are in the process of certain deals too. But I would say there's obviously exceptions to the rule. You know, we've signed certain talent, and I feel like even you were very much early on where we saw the content, the metrics, the following. And we were like, I mean, this is like crazy. Like, I feel like, you know, we met her through another client of ours because we happen to be very highly referral based. And so I think that also paired with it, we were like, I feel like we could really crush it. And I also feel like she's already within our community of talent. And so it felt like a no-brainer. And it really has been off the bat.
Yeah, I love that. It's business. And I think a lot of times if you are creating for the joy of it, it can feel like icky to go into a business environment. It's that same thing. Like, I don't do my own taxes. I have a CPA that does that. You could, but professional help really, really makes a big difference, or maybe opens doors that it wouldn't have before.
Absolutely. I also think you're able to, in some cases, competitively kind of bid on certain things. Like, if it's a longer term partnership, say an ambassadorship with a certain brand, you know, for example, we did one the other day. It's a very large LVMH jewelry company that we did like a six-figure deal for that is 12 months long for a client. And I think that really considering that and maybe being like, is this the brand you want to attach to for the next 6 months? Do you want to explore other options? Because we do have other brands that we also are connected to, competitive to this brand. And if you do this for 6 months, you can't work with any of them. You're attached to this brand exclusively. And those are also the things also to consider. And when you're on your own, you maybe don't have as much of that like landscape opportunity. And even understanding from our standpoint, being like, hey, we've had clients work with this person, that, you know, brand, even if you haven't, and this is how their rates usually are. So this is like, I think they could potentially afford a good deal, or maybe they couldn't. And so like, we shouldn't think about it. So
yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gotta build that team. I would say to encourage anyone thinking about a career in influencing from the brand side of things, I work with a lot of B2B brands, and you should be encouraged by really the leverage that you have. Trust is the best form of advertising. If someone that you know and trust and love and follow and have grown with for years and years supports a product, you're way more likely to buy that. So like all of the data and marketing, of which there is tons and tons and tons, and that's how businesses are making decisions, there is huge return on investment in influencer marketing, and it's proven in the sales and the bottom line. So in those negotiations, if you have a professional partner that can articulate that in a revenue sense, right? Like, hey, I'm going to make this content, and that's really powerful, and I'm making a piece of art. But that piece of art is going to make you money. And so you are inherently in a business discussion at that point. So it's very important to have contracts in order and make sure that you are, you know, getting paid fairly for that art that you're creating and for that trust that you've built with that community. You're a steward of them, and they trust you. And so there's just a lot to think about, and it's hard to go about it on your own.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, cool. Well, let's shift a tiny bit. So this is, you know, crush it as an influencer, no matter your generation. And so that kind of angle there, what we want to chat about. I often mentor women far older than me in an executive space, and I find that they have barriers to entry. They think they can't do something purely based on age. And I meet young women also that feel the same. So women are not, right, in any context. Would you guys chat a little bit about how you see yourself generationally, I think, as an influencer, and maybe Shayna, you can talk about demographics that you're seeing that are performing well from a business sense. But in general, like, who can be an influencer in your mind?
I think that anyone can be an influencer. I think the number one thing I would say if you're wanting to start creating content is to find a sort of mentor who can literally be any age. I mean, I follow women on social media that are 50 plus, that are showing amazing hair and makeup tips, and they know how to set up their lighting and things like that. And so I found these creators I loved, and I would start commenting, what's your lighting setup look like? What stand do you have your phone on? Things like that. How do you edit? And now I teach my hairstylist things like that, my eyebrow girl. Like, I'm now mentoring other people because someone had to teach me all these little basics that are hard to learn yourself. And even though I'm 23 years old and I grew up with TikTok, I've had, you know, it was formerly Musical.ly, I've had that since middle school. I'm really familiar with the platform, but still, when you're starting as a creator, it's really hard to figure things out no matter your age. So I think the best thing is to just find any sort of mentor. And yeah, there's people all different ages who are able to do that.
We can learn from anybody. I love that. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, for me, it was really just finding the inspiration. Like, back then, it was very photo-focused, and so videos weren't really that heavily created yet. And it was on Lookbook, on Tumblr, on Pinterest. I was really just looking for inspiration, like, oh, how are these people able to do this, and how are they creating their looks? And I'm kind of just transferring that over to how I would translate that from my point of view, and started off from there. And I feel like from there, I'm able to also, like, piggybacking on what Audrey had said, inspire other creators, and, you know, them asking me, oh, how do you do this? Or how did you come up with this, look? Or where did you shoot? And, you know, I'm able to, like, transfer over that information and help them as well. So it's all about really just sharing information and, like, helping each other out as well.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, both of you have two different styles. I would say, you know, primarily also based on the two platforms that you guys gravitated toward initially. You know, while you might do more things that are like speaking to camera tutorial-wise, I feel like you've also leaned into more of like a luxury, you know, more of like video editing kind of, you know, content. And so I guess from that perspective, like, how did you learn how to do certain like video editing things? Is it all kind of like learning on your own?
I think for me, I really wanted it to translate. So I wanted to create videos that translated the photos that I was already creating. So I wanted it to I wanted to make it more what I wanted to see on film and on videos, and then kind of take that inspiration and put it into my own work rather than just, you know, straightforwardly speak on camera, which I could also do, but I feel like the love for film, I really wanted to translate that into my own work for the brands that I work with. And being able to do that makes me love what I do, so I'm like, okay, this is my thing, I'm gonna keep doing that for the brands.
And John has such a beautiful artistic eye. Everything you do is so beautiful, and I feel like my content is very different. It's me talking to a camera saying, oh, this is how I did my hair today. But you have such a beautiful eye for art and gorgeous shots, and I think that's in every single generation. You find people, they're artists. Like, really, they have that eye for stuff, and they're so creative, and the only barrier there then is really the technology. So if you're able to find, I mean, it's amazing the things we have to access on YouTube, like tutorials on there and on TikTok, people explaining how they got that shot and what, you know, stand they're using for their phone. So even though everyone in any generation can have that artistic eye, you just need the technology part.
I love that. You mentioned barriers with technology. We're going to come back to that. Business-wise, demographically, what's your take on generational influencers? Or does it matter at all? Or are you seeing, you know, marketability differ?
I would say in terms of demographics, what we look most into is, especially even in signing talent, just because it indicates how much they're really able to monetize off the bat, is, you know, what is the area they want to go into? If they want to go into beauty, for example, which both of them do, I would say, do they have a primarily, like, female audience? If they're like 80% male, but they want to do beauty, product promotion, it makes it challenging because the beauty brands will be like, you're not selling to women. You know, we want to sell most of our products to women. And so I would say that, like, really understanding the background of their audience is really important. Also, like, the location. So, like, obviously, I think that, you know, we're USA-based. Most of the brands we are working with and projects are based in the US. And so, you know, from that perspective, our talent all have to have and maintain U.S. primary audiences. Like, obviously, if they were working with an audience that was majority, you know, a different, you know, country, say it's like Australia or something, you know, or Asia, like, then it would be tough, because I'd say that if we were working with Abercrombie and they want to promote something, say, in New York, and they want to target someone who has like a New York audience, US audience, they're not going to work with someone who doesn't have that audience. And so I think that from our perspective, we look for talent who have US audiences, and depending on what type of vertical of business they want to go into, making sure that it makes sense from like the conversations we're having with brands and agencies, like what they're asking us for. Because I don't think we ever want to be in positions where we're like, kind of being like, oh, we told you you could do all these things and that we could, you know, do all this stuff together, and then it's not working out. I think our whole thing up front is we want to be really transparent. We're here to, like, work with these talent, you know, for a lifetime. Hopefully we're able to, like, you know, grow business together and, you know, really, like, see that through. And I think that the best way to do that is to have, like, that transparency and that trust with our relationships with our clients off the bat, because otherwise it's just not going to work.
Really well said. Channels, when we talk about, you know, generational spread or just your own unique style, I think one of the beauties of creating content for yourself is you get to do things that you love. You get to bring your appreciation for film in. You get to jump on trends to some extent. I sat in on a great panel yesterday, and there's this tension point of how much do you jump on trends versus, like, build your library of content or this portfolio in an influencer space for brands, and how does that align, and how do you stay, you know, consistent with who you are as a person and your own ethos? It's a lot to think about. You are a walking business, so you have to have, you know, mission and values and all that kind of stuff. But does that vary on platform, do you guys think, or channel?
I would say on TikTok, it's heavily trend-based. On Instagram, it's more so your own style, I want to say. That's kind of like what I've been seeing. So it was more of a challenge for me on TikTok to really like jump on trends, because I'm not really one to jump on like, oh, the newest thing. Like I'm very like solid in what I love, but that's not to say that you can't learn something new, and that's not to say that you're able to shift your focus and, you know, build on a completely new platform. And I was able to do that with the help of the right management, of course.
Yeah, TikTok is definitely, yeah, shout out Shayna. TikTok is definitely trend-based. I have been able to, my content's been very consistent for the last year. I post a lot of hair tutorials and things like that, and that's not necessarily trend-based. Like, there's not necessarily trending products. I like what I like, and I've been consistently using it for years, but I've found ways to incorporate trending hashtags and trending audios, trending songs, and different things like that that I can incorporate into my content while still being really consistent and staying true to the kind of thing that I want to post.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say that TikTok is, you know, I'd say primarily like focusing on the trending sounds, and you'll see that follow on Instagram like a week later. You know, I think that's very normal for a lot of our clients who are on TikTok, and they'll like actually wait to repost their videos to Instagram maybe like later. And you do that too, because, you know, ultimately that's the way it works. But I would say that Instagram, I think, has been mimicking certain capabilities that TikTok has been putting out, just because I think it's become so popular, and I think people gravitate toward it in some cases to get, you know, all of those trends and news like quicker. So I would say that, like, you know, from that perspective, we've seen a lot of, you know, brands and also talent do a lot of cross promotion. Maybe they'll post a video to TikTok and they'll reshare it in Instagram in parts. Where maybe it's like a three-part, but they're like, for part three, go to my TikTok, or something like that, where they're trying to like push the, you know, different audiences to different platforms, just to be able to also grow both platforms, depending on where your larger platform is, or if you want to grow one more, which I feel like all of our clients do, you know, whether it's like a giveaway, or whether it's like a promotional thing, or whether it's a brand deal, because so many brands we work with do TikTok reshared to Reel. That is very, very common. And so I think that it's just a matter of like, you know, exactly what you're looking to kind of get out of either platform.
TikTok. Hot topic this week. Shayna, would you share a little bit about the importance of diversification of your channels for influencers for just this reason?
Yes, absolutely. I would say, you know, ultimately, whenever we sign a client to Ponte Firm, we talk to them about diversification, just because you never know what's going to happen. You know, when I started the agency, Instagram was like king. It was like the platform. There wasn't a TikTok. And I think TikTok really came in hot. And I think we discovered a lot of new talent that we now love and work with on TikTok. And, you know, I'd say that I, you know, met Jean on Instagram. I met you through TikTok. I think that we meet all our clients through different mediums. And so I would say that, you know, ultimately diversification is key. You're able to kind of leverage both platforms from a monetary perspective. You have more options because of that. If a brand's now shifting their budget from TikTok to Instagram, now you have an Instagram too, so you're not stuck worrying about, what if I have only followers on TikTok? What do I do if this ban goes through? So I think it's all about making sure that you have defensibility in your business as a creator. And that could be different platforms. It could be, you know, having a podcast. It can mean a lot of different things. But ultimately, that's really important.
Love it. I'm sure we'll get questions about that too. Audrey so brilliantly mentioned barriers to content creation. And I would say it could be perceived as a generational thing. I will use myself as an example. I'm 31. I can't create anything. It's just, I'm not like a tactile creator. I have a really hard time executing technically. And so that would be a barrier for me, let's say, if I wanted to be an influencer, because I struggle to make content. But something I've heard, you know, throughout these 2 weeks at South By is the influence of AI and new tools that remove barriers to creating content. It's not so much that anyone can do it or do it well, but just, I have help now. I don't have to edit photos in the right way. And I'm kind of starting a couple steps ahead. So as you guys think about like the future of influencing in terms of content creation, What comes to mind for you?
I think for me, it's just you as a human being being able to adapt to whatever comes. You know, like for me, it was TikTok. And for the longest time, Shanna can tell you that I was so like, no, I'm not going to do it. I am not. I'm not touching it. I'm not downloading it. And then I did, and, you know, she was right. Being able to diversify and being able to monetize both platforms was really helpful. And with a barrier of, you know, being so against it, I mean, it's really on you. Like, you are the only thing in your way, really, when it comes to barriers. And being able to, you know, create a mindset that, yes, I can learn, you know, which is what now AI and all of that. Like, it's really up to you as a creator, as a human being.
Yeah, there definitely are really cool AI tools for editing. I think specifically photos. I haven't necessarily implemented it into my TikToks, but more into still photos. You can use generative fill and expand the image so that it, you know, a lot of people are doing that at, on Instagram Reels because it crops in really tight. So you can generative fill with AI and expand your photo so the crop isn't as aggressive. There's a lot of cool things like that, but I do think that AI will kind of reach a kind of threshold at some point in this industry because at least with what I do, people really like the it sounds like I'm on FaceTime with someone in my videos. Like, I'm talking to that person. I'm interacting with questions one-on-one, and it almost feels like a friendship in some ways. And so I think that part is so important to people, and AI can't necessarily fill those shoes, at least for now.
Yeah, and, you know, from our perspective, you know, it's twofold. You know, I totally agree with what you said, because I think that the reality is people have really, really leaned into authenticity. And I think that it's, you know, impossible for an AI to be able to properly review a product authentically. They're AI. So I think that, you know, working with humans, which sounds funny, but I think that that's where you're going to get, like, the most real feedback. And I think specifically in certain categories, maybe less in fashion, and that's an area I feel like has started to play with it a little bit more than maybe beauty, where, you know, I think that you look for those reviews. You know, you look to understand, like, why you want to buy the product. And even, I guess, for apparel, it's try-on hauls. How can you properly have that? You know, I think that's also another tough thing. As a business, we've actually had conversations with AI influencers. It's been quite interesting. We've been approached by a few different companies that are really incredible in incubating these incredible, like, AI talent who already have millions of followers, which is wild, on platforms. And they're doing things like releasing music and like doing collaborations. It's pretty crazy to like see. That being said, I think that like whenever we have conversations about it as a team, you know, I think that AI will have, you know, its like moment more so, and they are, you know, in certain categories. But I think in terms of what we do and how we work with brands and what they look for, I just feel like authenticity is like something that like you really can't get from an AI on like this in the same way, especially from like a real person.
And I will say, I met the personal stylist of an AI influencer at a clothing store in LA, totally random. It's the AI influencer Michaela, Lil Michaela.
Oh yeah, we spoke to them.
They were like the first, I remember learning about it in middle school. It's almost 10 years old. And I was like, what do you mean there's a personal stylist for this AI influencer? But when you look at these influencers, they have teams of creatives behind them. So regardless of it being AI, there's still so many real humans with creative minds that are behind these people, styling them and designing them and picking out their new haircut and things like that. And I think
it's wild.
Yeah.
Some of them look very real.
They look incredibly real. It's crazy. Yeah. But there's creatives even behind these AI influencers.
Yeah. Yes, the spirit of art never dies, even if it's artificial.
Yeah. I love it. Well, good. Well, I would love to get to questions if anyone has those. I think we're going to line up at this microphone here in this room, but as folks get up and start asking their questions, do you guys have advice for folks looking to make a long-lasting, lucrative career in influencing? What's your one piece of advice for them?
Just start. Just do it. Don't even think about it. Just do it, honestly. If you think too much, you're never going to get it done.
I think find that thing that you can't shut up about, that you always want to talk to your friends about, that everyone wants to ask you about, and start posting about it. Find your niche. You already know you're good at it, and just share it with the world.
Yeah, from our perspective, I would say consistency is key. finding that thing's really important and staying consistent, posting consistently, because, you know, ultimately I think that you have to look at it as like a media channel. If you're posting like once a month, that's not often enough to engage your audience. So it really is something where you have to lean into doing things like daily, if not multiple, you know, days a week, just because I think you have to constantly keep your audience engaged. And so I think consistency is key.
Think about it like a job. Great advice. All right. Questions. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. My name's Talia. I know Annie. I went to high school with her. Sad you couldn't be here. I have a question when it comes to brands. How, I know you guys have a lot of experience with, you know, brands reaching out to you, you reaching out to brands. What's the best way for a brand to get an influencer partnership or, you know, anything like that? Over this week, I've kind of learned that less is more, and you want to give the influencer their, let them be creative and, you know, let them have the freedom to do it. You don't want to give them such strict barriers. You want to let them explore it. But how should a brand approach this partnership?
Yes, absolutely. I'd say that, you know, depending on the talent, we've had a lot of success with brands also like leaning into letting the talent lead their own creative. I think it's important, you know, you're tapping these talent because you like what they're creating organically. And so I think that like sending them a 20-page brief of yes and no's maybe isn't the way to get them to create their best content. I think it's really important to have a conversation about what makes sense for them on their own platform, so that you can properly like integrate your brand into it, so it doesn't feel forced. Because I think you want it to feel like you're just watching another video that they're creating and you love. But if it comes off like something that like they're reading from like a brief and being very robotic, is not going to have that same effect that you're looking for.
That's a really great question. I think working with brands to respect an approach to the creative is critical. It has to be a partnership based on mutual respect, and making it easy for them and letting them run with that creativity is a huge part of that. Respect them like a business person. It is a business deal, but let them do what they're good at. Love it. Thank you.
Hey, y'all. Austin Evans. Wonderful panel today. The first thing I think, just to give y'all flowers during Women History Month, like I appreciate the verbiage that y'all brought as far as explaining it and like simplifying it for us in a very succinct way. But so thank you for that. And really, coming today, I'm working on technology out at Stanford that focuses on digitizing word of mouth, and focusing on that from the political and the social, from the political and the social sector as well. But I really wanted to ask about, when you think about the algorithm and thinking about posting and just magnetizing word of mouth for the groups that, the affinity groups and things that you're a part of, what are some of the pain points that you kind of see as you move to different platforms or try to post, you know, or what are some strategies that you're looking to implement? And then, is that something where it's more so on the influencer side, the creativity needs to happen, or is the management team stepping in and saying, hey, go this way? And so, who's the one making those?
Great question.
Yeah, I think that different platforms definitely do have their own styles. On TikTok, people love storytime style, FaceTime style, and on when I post on Instagram, it's a lot of the videos where I'm not talking and I'm just showing, you know, how I'm doing my hair with a song in the background, and those tend to be more successful on Instagram. So I think just kind of testing the waters, that's how I found out how to do that. And then yeah, Shayna and my team at Ponte, they've been great with, you know, telling me how other clients have had success and things like that. But then again, I mean, they really let me kind of do my own thing and figure it out for myself, and then they're there when I need advice.
Yeah, I would say that we try to always, like, you know, we have like weekly conversations, like, you know, or I'd say monthly conversations where we go through like full-blown downloads. But I think that we talk to our talent, you know, daily. And I think if ever we see certain shifts or trends, you know, in the marketplace, we want to like inform them of what's going on, and we want to talk to them and work through if there's any new strategies that need to be put into place. I mean, ultimately, it's their content, it's their platform, but we also want to be like, you know, staying on top of like the newness. And I think that Jean brought that up earlier where she talked about moving to TikTok more so. And I think that was something where we had conversations of, hey, based on like, you know, the agency we work with, over 70 creators, we do hundreds of different campaigns a month. These are the trends, and this is what we're seeing in bookings, and maybe this is something that we really need to take seriously so that, like, you're able to kind of still maintain a certain level of revenue and grow if that's where the market is shifting. And we're having conversations even now after, you know, the TikTok, what's been going on there, just in terms of, like, you know, what to do and, you know, if it's anything different than what we've been suggesting.
Yeah, I would note there, track. So if you are influencing and doing all that reposting and cross-platform and that promotion yourself, make sure you have a baseline of data to show how effective that was if you don't have an agency doing that for you, right? Because then you can show the brand success. So try different things. Just make sure you're tracking what the results of those things are. And then if a management firm, you know, with lever pullers, as we call them, data and tracking people, all the better. Then it kind of scales your time and lets you be the creator and the technical team be technical.
Thank you. Yeah, no. Attribution is so important. After I'll come up and talk to you. Thank you.
Attribution, great word. Thank you.
Hey, hello. I'm Bob. Thank you for the panel. I'm a business owner. I'm in AI infrastructure. I have 5 influencers on the payroll, right? So what these people do, they write software and are, and they do that like in video format, content. So most important platform for us is LinkedIn. So it's like LinkedIn, X nowadays, and Medium. And these people just, you know, they show how you build with AI. It's very similar to what you do, but then with software. So I have 5 people on the payroll doing that. It's working because there's like, for example, here at this event, if I go to an AI thing, I have close to 100% brand recognition. That is because of the influencers in the company, right? So that's very important. Our target audience is very small. It's US and Europe combined is between 10 and 12 million software developers, so that's relatively small. But my question is this, metrics. I pay a lot of money for this stuff. It's working, but how do I measure? Right, so because what we do not do, it's not, so the example that Jane gave of like, you know, the t-shirt stuff, that kind of, we don't have those kind of things. So it's very top of funnel, but there's a distance between actually the recognition and that turning into a sale. What metrics can I apply to know that it's working?
That's a great question. Attribution. Just like, how do I attribute influence or success to that influencer's work?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I would say that in terms of metrics, I mean, you know, the influencer landscape over the past few years, I feel like metrics have been something that have come up more and more and more. It used to just be about brand awareness, and you wouldn't necessarily even think about seeing anything in some cases from it. But now it's very driven toward either conversion metrics, et cetera, especially the larger types of talent you work with where you're paying, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50K per a single thing. You want to be able to kind of justify that. I would say it really depends on the platform. What I would say, just kind of understanding exactly, like, you know, what is the success of this or that. I could tell you from our perspective and working with brands that if they want to come to us and work with any of our clients and ask about any of their demographics, any of their back-end analytics, from impressions to reach to gender breakdown, et cetera, we have all of that. We get it updated monthly, so like every 30 days, and we have that available. We could also talk to maybe, you know, some of the other partnerships that they're doing if it's similar to the brand that is coming to us, so if we've seen success with it. So we could kind of give as much kind of a insight that we can, you know, just to kind of make the brand feel more comfortable.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'd love to chat with you after, too. I think there's some actual tracking that you can set up on your side of the sales process, like in your CRM, your client relationship management tool, where you could attribute new activity or new reach specifically to an influencer based on tracking codes and where that traffic's coming from, top of funnel. So,
okay,
yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Go ahead.
Hi, Tammy Kesselman. So my question is, I speak a lot around the world at private wealth investor conferences, mm-hmm. and I speak on aligning wealth creation and impact, mm-hmm. and then I do coaching kind of in that audience. So it's mostly, but like, white male investors over 50 is 60% of every room I speak in. And within that little pond, I'm pretty well known, and speaking on wealth, impact, happiness, which is a challenge in a lot of that, and crafting enduring legacy. So I just launched a LinkedIn Live last month that I'm starting, but I'm trying to figure out, because people are asking me to do more content, but I feel like my demographic is not getting their financial and impact advice from TikTok, but I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but in my mind, that's just not, even if they're scrolling TikTok, that's not where they're going to take me seriously for what I'm talking about. So I want to understand a couple things. First of all, agency-wise, are there some agencies that focus more on men as a demographic, forgetting who the influencer is, versus women, or are they across everything? And then brand-wise, would brands be as likely, if I develop a following on LinkedIn, to do kind of the same type of deals there, or should I be looking across different avenues?
Beautiful question. Know your audience, the golden rule of marketing, so you're thinking about this in the right way. I love it. Agencies, I'm sure, specify. What do you think?
Yeah. I think it's really important to have a lot of different conversations based on, and I would say, you know, we have in the 90s in terms of referral rates of clients and, you know, who we sign, I would say a big part of it that they'll say is, I saw this company's, you know, information in your bio. For a lot of our clients, they'll have our email in their bio, they'll have the name, something like that. And so I would maybe also look toward other people in the space who do very similar things to you and see who they work with. Because whoever they work with will likely have similar deal flow to what you're maybe looking for. And so that would be a really good fit.
I love watching women in finance stuff on TikTok. There's definitely a market for that. It might just be a new demographic for you. So that could be something to look into on top of what you're already doing.
Oh, awesome. Absolutely. I would say, I mean, we spoke to a woman who's doing like an SPV and she's really cool. We spoke to her this week. So, and she's doing a lot of TikTok videos, but I would say she's doing a mix of like TikTok beauty and, or like, I guess, finance, beauty, and fashion, because she's investing in some of these like beauty companies as well and things of that nature. But it really depends on your niche and what you're really kind of going for and, you know, the other talent in your landscape. But I think there's a lot of cool, you know, influencers on TikTok and Instagram who are talking about finance. And we've, you know, as a company, have done deals with like SoFi and Citibank and, you know, Amex and all of the kind of different QuickBooks, things like that. So I would say, yeah, I mean, there's definitely a space for it.
For sure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Nase. So I just started as a content creator like 2 years ago. And the following kind of threw me off, like how fast it was. And what I'm struggling with, and I'm sure other people are struggling with, is that you did mention that it's important to stay authentic and with brands that you actually resonate with and you actually use. Mm-hmm. But how do you stay within your niche when you have varying interests to where, like, I mean, because people want to connect with you, but I feel, I mean, also I'm also ADHD, so it's like I do like 1,000 things. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. I think, so I can speak for myself, but I don't really, I do beauty and fashion heavily, mm-hmm. but I also do a lot of other things because we are multidimensional as human beings and there's so many interests we have, and I feel like boxing yourself in into just these two things, it's almost impossible because, you know, you want to talk about cooking, you want to talk about your pets, maybe your family, maybe your home, and so tying that in is important because that kind of adds up into who you are as a person, and it leaves you to be more authentic because then your audience connects with you in that sense and it creates your community and it's greater for monetizing in the long run, I would say.
Totally. And there's also tools like on TikTok you're able to create, it's called a series tool. So say you're making cooking videos and fashion videos and those are two totally different audiences, you're able to break those videos down into series. So if you have one of your followers that only wants to watch your cooking content, they're able to click a little button on your profile and it will take you to strictly the cooking content as they're scrolling your feed. So there's a lot of cool features like that to look into.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Stephanie, and I wanted to ask for advice for someone that's starting on how you reach out for collaborations or just how to get noticed by a brand or just, I mean, anything.
I would say that, you know, for talent that we've met, so we've talked to talent, and we do, who are either, you know, we'll meet them, they're either coming from another agency, in some cases they've been doing this a long time. There's also a lot of talent who are just starting out, and maybe they're in their first year of doing this, right? And so, you know, I would say that, you know, step one really is tagging the types of brands that you want to work with. You know, say for her, it was hair videos. Like, if Olaplex is her favorite brand, and Dyson's one of her favorite brands, she's, you know, I mean, she's tagging constantly. And they're going to notice your videos because they will see it at some point. You know, somebody on their marketing team will flag it and be like, she really likes our products. Maybe we should send her some. And that's usually how the relationship will start, where maybe they'll send you something, you'll try it out, you'll post about it, and say it crushes it and does incredibly well. And then maybe you talk to them about a paid partnership. But I would say that when you're starting out, a lot of these types of conversations are going to come through like a starting gifting perspective that turn into a paid perspective.
Thank you.
I am wondering what your favorite tools are for scheduling posting. I know you guys have said it is so important to be posting really consistently and to be diversifying across platforms. I have spent 20 years working as a lifestyles writer in legacy media. I'm really experienced creating, but I'm also the person who usually spends days making sure something's perfect before it's published. So I find my work over the past 20 years has been all over the, as long as social has existed, the social channels of all the publications I work for, but I haven't built my own following. And as I move toward writing a book, I know book publishers want to know you have your own personal audience. And so I know I need to cultivate that this year, but when I do want to just quickly put something on Instagram, I do find that I worry about, like, is it perfect? Is it ready? And I think if I could sit down once a week and use some fantastic tool and create some great stuff, or twice a week, I would put more out. So I'm just wondering what you guys use and how expensive it is. Do you need to pay for a really good paid level of something like Later or something like that? Or are there free tools out there that are good?
I don't use any tools personally, but I do sit down once or twice a week, like you said, and I film a whole bunch of content. Sometimes I'll change my shirt so it looks like a different day because I know I'm going to be, you know, pushing that out 4 or 5 days a week, even though it's all filmed on Sunday. So I do things like that. And then, like you said, I'm a perfectionist too. And once I started posting, I had to get over that because people just want to see you be real and authentic, and they want to see a lot of it. And so if you're spending 10 hours on every single 1 minute long video, you're not going to be posting consistently. So I think really just getting out as much as you can and, yeah, sitting down once a week and filming as much as you can, I think that's the way that I've been able to do it.
I actually do use a tool. It's called Planoly. I don't know how to say it. It's Planoly. And I use it both on Instagram and TikTok, and I find that it works better for Instagram. I like to plan my feed a lot and like kind of curate like what I post and like does it go with this color on this specific square. So it's been really helpful. I've been using it for the last 5 years. There's a lot of other ones similar to that, but I feel like that one is the most like tried and true. I've tried different ones, and I think that one's the best one. And I think, don't quote me on this, I think it is $60 for the year.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
So it's like almost free. Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, also there's a planning. Is there a schedule? You can already schedule your posts on Instagram as well.
Yes,
so if you want to do that, that's also really great to start if you don't want to do the Planoly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, by the way, super inspired that you're all women. I have a couple successful podcasts that aren't under my name, and I mean people know it's me, but I keep me small on purpose because I am terrified of privacy and safety, and then I'm also very concerned with like online hate, which somehow luckily I haven't had a lot of, but I'm very fucking scared of it, and so I keep myself small in order to avoid those two things, one being harmed and then being bullied or hated, or how do you psychologically deal with that and how do you keep yourself safe from hackers and bad people in the world? It's a really sincere question that I struggle with weekly.
My brother works in cybersecurity, and so he has always been kind of scared of what I do, but he gives me a lot of great advice, and I think for the safety aspect, you do need to be smart about, are you showing the entire layout of where you're living? Are you showing the outside of your building if you're filming outside? Like, just little things like that you definitely need to be a proactive thinker about. Yeah, I think that's really important. And then as far as hate comments go, I'm sure we definitely get them, and it is hard, but there are a lot of great tools. You're able to filter comments. You can turn comments off. You can filter keywords. Mm-hmm. So if you see one comment that says something negative about you and you know that's a trigger, you can filter that, and nobody will ever be able to comment it again. So there's a lot of great tools like that that kind of put that blocker in place so that you're not having to actually read that when it's commented.
You know, I would say that, you know, almost all of our clients have mentioned to us, you know, online bullying. I think, unfortunately, it's become the culture, you know, of social media. And I think it could be just about anything. You know, I think it's really important as a company where we have a lot, like a community. And I think it's really good to have a community in your space. So, you know, who are doing similar things so that you have people to lean on around you, because some of the hate is really vicious. And so I would say that it's something where you can't really escape it. You could do those things like those keywords specifically for TikTok, which is really great. But I would say that trying to really, as best as you can, cut out the noise, because, you know, especially with Reddit and other forums, I think that some of these things have really escalated. And I think that if you let the hate get to you, it really can start to really, you know, affect your self-esteem and just a bunch of other things. And so I would say really making sure that you have a community around you of people doing similar things and a support system who really understand it will really help with counteracting that. It's really, you know, just an unfortunate thing that a lot of our talent deal with on a daily basis.
And the majority of comments are typically positive, especially if you find your niche and people watching it are within your niche. Like, they're really positive and encouraging comments, and that feels great. And it's really easy to look at, okay, I got 10 amazing comments and one bad one. Who am I going to believe? Like, 10 people are here saying really nice things, and so that helps drown out the negativity that you get.
If you don't mind leaning into it a little bit further, like, how do you personally handle it psychologically? And then also, like, even when you, like, leave your house, I'm genuinely curious, do you guys get scared? I'm leaving my house, I need to make sure someone's at my house, or I have a good alarm system, or, you know, like, I don't know, like, how do you protect yourselves in your personal lives, if you don't mind sharing?
4 minutes. I think just as a woman, that's a lot of things we have to think about no matter what, whether you're posting online or not. Self-defense and things like that have been in the back of my head since I was a teenage girl. So I think that I've had implemented for so many years, and I continue to do things like that just for my overall safety. And then, yeah, psychologically, I think having people I can talk to, having other creators in this space that I'm close with that I can say, oh my gosh, I got this really negative comment and made me feel bad, and having a friend who understands what you're going through, who can, you can lean on them, and they can say, that's not true, don't listen to that, things like that. So yeah, you definitely do need to be mentally strong and develop a strong sense of confidence, because things can get too easily.
Thank you. I think also posting later. Don't post where you're at when
you're
there.
Yeah, I never ever live post.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is our last question. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Nate. I'm a content creator mainly on TikTok. And my question was, it sounds like all across the board, everyone says like authenticity is so important. But like, what if you kind of find yourself in like trapped in a niche, and then you're like, this is the thing that gets the most engagement. So I'm just going to, I feel like I'm forced almost to like keep doing it because that's what the algorithm wants. So is it possible to take your current audience that you've built and then, you know, move into another style of content?
Absolutely. We work with our clients all the time on this. You know, you might start off doing something, and as you're growing as a person, you might want to create something else. You know, I think that these things happen, and your audience will follow you as you grow. They're growing up with you, essentially. And so, you know, I like to talk about it with our clients and being like, imagine that it's like you have something you really love in the middle, and then you kind of have like different arms, like an octopus, that are going to all of the other things that you really like. You know, really trying to bring it back to that center of like what maybe you've always talked about and related to. But you're going to grow into new types of content as you grow as a person. So I think that as long as like you're able to relate it back and it's authentic to you, then it's not forced. It's exactly what you're meant to do.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.